Welcome to the Locke Associates Group series of podcasts, where you'll get to know our experts, who will take you through our legal, HR, wellbeing, and mediation services, giving you a deeper insight as to why people are our business.
I'm Paul Harvey, and welcome to the Locke Associates Group series of podcasts. And I'm with today Alex Kiernan and Kez Yeo. Welcome to you both. Kez, could you just describe your role within Locke Associates Group?
Okay, so I'm an HR consultant and I work for HR Advise Me, which is part of the Locke Associates Group. And I work with clients daily dealing with HR issues, recruitment, training, things like that.
Thank you, Kez. Alex?
I'm a solicitor and director within the Locke Associates Group. I fall within, obviously, the sort of legal wing of the group of companies. And, you know, I spend a lot of time day to day advising employers and employees on employment law and how best to address it and deal with it.
And what we're going to be talking about today is the future of the workplace. So I'm going to come to you first, Kez, if I may. This is a massive force change that employment, working from home, not working from the office, has been forced upon the working universe for such a long time now. And there's no real template for this, is there? What are we learning from this remote working?
Yeah, like you say, when this all kind of kicked off, it wasn't a planned kind of strategic shift to working from home. It was very much reactive, I think, for a lot of employers and just kind of, you know, staff leaving the office, taking what they can and not coming back in. And since then, there's been a bit of follow-up. You know, some employers will have, and more should probably, carry out things like desk place assessments, so DSE assessments, which is display screen equipment assessments, and just home working risk assessments. That should identify what equipment they need in a practical side. But yeah, on the whole, it's still very much been unplanned. And that does mean that people are just kind of recreating their office working at home, as opposed to looking at, you know, what tasks and what works well at home and what stuff can we change from how we did it in the office to at home. Yeah, it has been forced on employers and employees, and I think there's lots that we can look at in terms of the future and going forward, and how do we make it work better, and what will the working arrangement look like? Will we do hybrid, or will we have everyone working at home?
Alex, could you describe where there are shortfalls now in terms of this workplace from home and the issues that are now rising? What sort of slippage are you seeing in the workplace?
It's been interesting to see, and I think there's a lot of, in some ways, unforeseen issues that have occurred from this sort of semi-social experiment that we've been through. And I think one of the things more recently that we've tended to come across as a group is a sort of slight change in the behavioural norms. And what I mean by that is there is a certain way that we are all used to behaving in the workplace, in the office environment. I think it's partly because people are sitting at home in their environment, so as to speak, rather than the office, that their behaviour in some cases has changed. And I think often that has exhibited itself in terms of a more informal approach to things like workplace meetings, and more often sort of breaking the normal rules and not following the normal kind of workplace culture.
So Kez, when we all go back into the workplace physically and attend meetings and get involved with our business, hands-on, back into the office, do you think there are going to be some physical and mental challenges that will be confronting the employer?
Yeah, I think there is. I think something I've noticed recently, as I've had communication with employees from various organisations, is I think a lot of people have had the approach of just getting their head down and getting on with it, and actually maybe not dealing with all the emotions that have come up in the past year. And just because it has now been a year and it's been a long time, I think it's starting to come out for a lot of employees. And it's something that's probably easily hidden when you are, perhaps are working at home. And actually when you're back in the office and you're seeing people face to face and you are able to engage a bit more with your colleagues, I think that you will see people who have struggled and it has impacted their well-being perhaps a lot more than we'd realised. So I think that will be a challenge. I think a lot of employees have been struggling emotionally and just kind of suppressing that. So that could potentially come out. I guess it could just look like a bit less resilient than they used to be, struggling a bit more with the normal tasks, but just changing the working environment again. Not everyone is that great at handling change. People react and respond differently to that. And some people need very, very clear structure in their working day to perform at their best. So it will impact those individuals. And there's also, of course, the anxiety around mixing again, getting back on trains, and that is likely to cause for some employees and employers an issue in terms of trying to get staff back into work. And that's something that the employer will need to think about. How are they going to address that? And if they can think about it beforehand and preempt those issues, are they able to negotiate, I suppose, with employees without upsetting them? I think the benefit of what we've been through in the past year and having that summer gap, I suppose, where staff were starting to come back to work, it means that we can look at how we did it then and what can we do better next time. And in my experience, actually, some employees felt that it was forced on them too early, or that they didn't understand why they were being asked to come back. Maybe that wasn't communicated that well, and that's all something that we can implement better this time.
Yes, Alex, as Kez has just mentioned in that piece about needing a clear structure, employees are going to need a really clear structure from their employer about how to move forward with the new workplace environment. Where do you step in here? Tell us more about how you help the leadership process with the boss.
I absolutely agree with many of the points that Kez has just mentioned. And another one that immediately springs to mind for me is, on top of everything else that's been mentioned there, is the fact of the matter is there's going to be a lot of employees who have, whilst many may have potentially struggled, many will have absolutely loved working from home. And I do think that potentially is going to be an area for conflict between certain employers and employees, because you're going to have those employees coming back into the, being asked to come back potentially into the office and thinking, well, actually, I was quite happy in the working environment I had and I want to go back to that. And I think that, and I know we're going to come on to talk about it, is it seems highly likely to me to, you know, that it's going to result in lots of flexible working requests and discussions where employees are saying, actually, I don't want to work in this way, going back to the traditional ways. I want to work from home in potentially a hybrid situation, or maybe entirely from home. So, sorry, coming back to your main question, the thing that I think all of us in Lock Associates would stress at this moment in time is we have the benefit right now of time to plan. And I think from an employer's perspective, now is absolutely the right time to be thinking. All of these issues, of which there are many, are going to come to the fore, I suspect, when offices are looking at getting staff back to work or back to some form of workplace operation. And that, as Kez has said, change causes conflict in the workplace. And I think that they need to think about how they are going to enable that change to take place in the best way policy. Also, they need to think about what their actual policies are. So planning at this stage, I would say, and formulating policies that they're going to follow.
Kez, it looks like, therefore, there is still going to be remote working as a hybrid mix, as Alex has said. There's going to be this hybrid situation between physically going into the office and working remotely, and how you split that across the days. It's going to happen in a lot of cases, isn't it? And are you expecting calls from both employees, actually, and employers? I'd like to know the mix, actually. I'd like to know if employees are going to be making contact with you and saying, I'm really not happy with the way that my employer's, you know, setting this out for me. It's not clear and I'm not happy about it. Are you anticipating a number of calls along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, I think it varies from company to company, obviously, and how it's dealt with. But yeah, you're likely to get employees that aren't happy and that will be complaining about the way it's been done, or about them being asked to come back in when actually, from their point of view, they've proven that they can work from home. I guess to begin with, companies can be reviewing now what flexible options they're going to offer, because it isn't just working from home, and it may be that some staff would actually benefit from more of a flexible approach in terms of their hours. So yeah, companies should be considering that as a whole, not just flexible working, meaning working from home. And then when they communicate to staff about what they are offering and what they want it to look like, I think it's important to discuss and consider how their managers might respond. I think that managers can be quite an obstacle to flexible working if they think it's a hard thing, or it makes their job harder, or they don't, for whatever reason, they might, you know, be a bit of an obstacle for it, or they might really push it and they might really encourage it. So I think you can look at the managers you've got in place, what support might they need if you are going to adopt a hybrid approach, as well as the employees. And if you are deciding that actually it's quite limited, your approach to flexible working, and you do really want staff back in, and you might be offering, you know, one day or something else, but it's quite limited, I think it's about, why is that? Is it linking to your values? Because you want a very collaborative approach and you feel that that is better, that culture is better created when everyone's in work. And if so, why don't we make sure that the communication to employees makes that very clear and encourages that, so that they can at least understand why you've come to the decision that you have come to. The reaction I've had previously in the past year is that if employees can't understand why, and there is no real other reason, when they say that actually I've been working fine from home, and the company can't put forward, yes, I know that and you have been and it's great, but actually going forward we still are a company that believes in, you know, XYZ, and in order to achieve that we believe that we need colleagues working together physically.
If I could sort of add off the back of that, I think that that is a really, really important point in terms of, and this is all part of the planning period that we have now, it's time for a company. Let's say a company is going to decide that they want to have lots more working in the office long term because they want, you know, they think that's better from a collaborative point of view, then now is the time in which you should be thinking about how you're going to justify that at a later date, because it strikes me as highly likely you are going to have employees, you know, in the future saying, well, why is that? I can work perfectly well from home, exactly as Kez has just said. So it's all part of that planning. It's thinking about how you are going to work and also thinking about how you are going to justify why you've taken the decisions that you have.
Yeah, this is a fascinating area. So, Alex, going one step further on this, how important now is getting the job description right for the employee? Because most of them have to be torn up now. You know, there's got to be some new thinking about balancing and putting this hybrid workplace situation into writing and being very clear about it in terms of how it's reflected in the job description.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I quite often wouldn't get too caught up over the job description as a document in and of itself. Yes, it's a very useful document for management and for people to understand what's expected of them. And yes, I do think it will probably need some updating in most cases. But I think fundamentally for me, the point of working from home is, if you can do it successfully, is to be able to do that same job that you were doing in the office, just in a different location. So, you know, if done well, I would imagine that the job description shouldn't change too much.
Kez, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, so I suppose what I would be thinking is the key things that might need to change, like Alex said, as opposed to the job description, I think would be looking at how performance is managed. I think that if you haven't got clear kind of objectives in place or a clear performance management process in place in terms of, you know, manager and employee knowing what is being looked at and what is being reviewed at the end of every month or quarter or whenever you do that, if that's not clear, I think you do run a risk of, even subconsciously in managers not realizing, I think you run a risk of them actually basing their performance judgment from their observations of the employee in the office. And actually, if you are going to be doing more of a hybrid working pattern or a working from home pattern, you will need to make sure that you're changing that, and that what is being reviewed in the performance management process is the output, whatever that might be for the particular role or industry. So I think that would be something that's key, to make sure that your performance management process and documents is set up for, I guess, the manager not necessarily being able to just watch and observe what the employee is doing.
Alex, it's all about performance, isn't it? And tracking performance and how you get the balance right in order to achieve optimum.
Well, I think that that's definitely, I think that's definitely a part of it. I think there is no doubt that if someone is going to be hybrid working or working from home, that managers have to adapt the way they manage, and the business has to adapt to accommodate that. And certainly proactively managing an individual in that situation and changing the way in which you interact and address that management is a key part of making home working a success, I think, in most businesses. So again, this comes back to the sort of planning. It also comes back to training from a management perspective. And that's something that we do a lot of work with clients on, you know, providing that sort of nip it in the bud training, we call it, to try and get managers used to managing individuals working from home. It's definitely different.
Are there any case studies now emerging out of this new environment? I mean, is there something called My Kind of Future as a case study that's worth just highlighting quickly?
Yeah, well, My Kind of Future is one of a client that we've worked with for a number of years, and they try and help sort of disadvantaged individuals into, you know, help them with their career and help them into appropriate roles. And we've been talking to them as one of our clients that we work with, and they've provided some interesting kind of analysis on what they found with their staff. I think generally for them, it's been a positive thing. They've had fairly open and frank discussions, which is a good thing to do, I think, with their employees to see what they think about future working and how that can work for them and the business.
Kez, if we come on to the vaccine situation, and employers, obviously, are they going to be in a position where they can dismiss staff who refuse to actually get a vaccine? And if they don't have proper medical grounds to on which they can refuse it, what's the stance here? What can employees do about that?
So I think, I mean, if I just give a bit of my input, but I think probably Alex best place to give his legal advice on that. I mean, I think on the whole, you need to be reasonable, and there are probably going to be a lot of organisations that, yeah, arguably wouldn't be able to justify enforcing vaccinations. And I think when it comes to vaccinations, things that employers need to be aware of is that, like you said, not everyone will necessarily get it done, and you need to maintain confidentiality over who is and isn't. What you don't want is, I guess, it getting out to other colleagues or employees, confidential private information that is then discussed. You need to be careful about, I guess, diversity and discrimination, because it may be that it's linked to a particular belief or cultural background, in which case, you know, it's very risky to start talking about that, especially if they have a different view to you and colleagues are talking about it quite potentially, you know, rudely. I think employers are going to have to tread quite carefully in how they deal with those that get vaccinated and those that maybe don't. They also need to think about, obviously, health and safety. What they might have is some employees saying that they don't feel that it's a safe environment if there are other colleagues there that haven't been vaccinated. So that's a potential issue as well. I was actually reading an article from People Management this week, and someone had suggested that what employers might be able to do, as opposed to enforce a kind of you need to or you be vaccinated, they could just perhaps get someone in who is medically trained to just discuss with employees around the vaccinations, the kind of myths that have been going on, what is actually correct, and just giving them, I suppose, a bit of education and helping them make that decision. But yeah.
It's clearly a very challenging area, isn't it? I mean, we don't even really know. There's no real history in relation to vaccines. We don't really know the outcome of what's going to happen, you know, 6 months down the line after I've been vaccinated. I wish you all the best, guys. But Alex, I'd be interested to hear your response to this.
Sure. It's a question that I've actually discussed a fair bit recently. And I've discussed it most recently in the context of the care home situation, where many will say it's sort of mission critical, essentially, to ensure that care staff are vaccinated, given the residents there and the vulnerabilities that they have. And, you know, I would say the short answer to the question, can an employer force a vaccine, is no. Of course they can't force a vaccine, you know. They can't sort of hold someone down and stick a needle in their arm. But what they can do is they can take certain steps to kind of try and cajole or compel the individual to have a vaccine. And that is obviously quite a controversial area. And the most common way of trying to encourage that, or compel, as some may say, is potentially they say, well, we're not going to employ people who don't have the vaccine. And I know that a number of care homes have already said that. And secondly, they potentially look at dismissing individuals. Again, short answer to that is, can they dismiss someone for not having had the vaccine? Well, an employer can dismiss for an unlawful reason. It's very difficult to stop an employer from dismissing someone. So yes, they can dismiss. The question then arises, well, was that a lawful dismissal? And that is quite a complex issue. we don't have very good case law at all on it. We solicitors base our views on what's happened in the past in terms of how cases have been decided and the legislation that's out there. And we simply don't have that on some of these issues. I think the key sort of areas or the sort of bones of contention, if you like, over this is, well, if you dismiss someone with more than 2 years' service for failing to have a vaccine, I should say, for those with less than 2 years' service, I think they're in a much more vulnerable position. And that's because with less than 2 years' service, they're not able to bring an ordinary claim for unfair dismissal. Those with more than 2 years' service, my view is, we don't have case law on it, but my view is, in a normal office setting, I think that that is likely to give rise to an unfair dismissal. And I think it's because they've got to have a good argument, ultimately, that it's a fair basis for dismissal and there's a good justification behind it. And in a normal office setting, I think to compel someone on pain of dismissal, I think is likely to be decided as unreasonable, frankly. I think in something like a care home, I do think the situation is going to be different because it's so much more critical, or the NHS or something to that effect. So it's going to be a really interesting one to see how that develops. Discrimination claims are another one that might potentially arise as a result of this, but we're going to have to wait and see.
Alex, can we please touch on flexible working requests? Because I'm sure you're just going to be inundated along that topic. Can you please expand some more on that and how they should be handled properly?
And I think that's absolutely right. I think it seems quite likely, you know, as we progress with people returning to the office, there's going to be increasing amounts of these requests. So in a nutshell, employees have the right to request flexible working if they have more than 26 weeks continuous service. They have the right to make one request every 12 months. And there's a certain process they have to follow. In essence, they have to set it out in writing. What I always think is quite important and interesting about the process is that employee actually has to, in effect, just they have to say what they want exactly, which is always helpful. And secondly, they have to justify what effect they think the request they're asking for will have on the business and how the business can deal with that. So an employee has to justify how it can work for the business, essentially. The business then has to consider that request in what's known as a reasonable manner, which is relatively vague, but essentially they have to have a serious think about whether it can work for the business. And they have to make that decision within a 3-month period. So normally that involves meeting with the individual, discussing it with them, and just looking at whether or not it's viable for the business or not. Ultimately, I mean, in many cases, it may just get agreed and it usually will become a permanent change to their employment contract. If it's not agreed, the employer, and I often stress, there is a right to make a flexible working request. There is not a right to have flexible working or to change your working practices. So they can be refused. There are 8 statutory reasons on which an employer can refuse that request. And you know, some of the key ones are because of additional cost, because of the impact on quality or the impact on performance for clients. Those reasons need to be cited. It's really important when you're making decisions to follow these statutory reasons. And ultimately, there is some risk from an employer's perspective. There is the right to bring a claim in respect of the flexible working process if it hasn't been followed properly or it's been dealt with unreasonably. And that can give rise to up to 8 weeks pay in terms of compensation. But often the bigger risk here is the risk of some form of discrimination claim. For example, a sex discrimination claim can sometimes be successfully pleaded if, let's say hypothetically, it's a female member of staff wanting to change hours because of childcare reasons. So it can be a tricky issue. The actual statutory process isn't that complex, but it's worthwhile thinking carefully about the risks associated with the decisions that you're making.
And do you foresee that the statutory reasons may have to be reviewed because of what's been going on in the last year?
I don't think they will need to be reviewed in terms of the rationale, but I know that there has been talk within government as to whether or not there should be a right to work flexibly. So it's so sort of change it round in that regard, and that is being looked at.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion with you, Alex Kiernan, and Kez Yeo from Locke Associates Group. Do you know what? I think we should actually have this discussion again in a year's time and see how things have changed. That would be fascinating. But for now, Alex, would you like just to remind the listeners in terms of how you can be contacted?
We've got lots of information on our website, which is www.loch, spelled L-O-C-H, associates.co.uk. And my telephone number is 01273 311 855.
Thank you. And Kez, would you like to just put your contact details over?
Yep. So HR Advise Me as a whole, any of our consultants can be reached on ask@hradvise.me or my email address, which is kez.yeo@lochassociates.co.uk.
Well, thank you very much, Alex Kiernan and Kez Yeo from Loch Associates Group. I'm Paul Harvey, and please be sure to follow the other podcasts in this series with Loch Associates.
Thank you for listening to this Loch Associates Group podcast. For more information about our award-winning team and why our services are shaped to meet your business needs, please go to lochassociates.co.uk.